Hey everyone, welcome to the I-117 podcast. I'm your host, Ross Weingartner. Thanks for joining me today as we take a look at current events, inequality, and faith. A few things before we dive into today's episode. First of all, I'd like to reiterate all of my support for the first responders and the healthcare professionals that are stepping up during this pandemic. Shortly before recording this week's podcast, an article from the New York Times popped up on my newsfeed, and it talked about the mental and emotional toll treating this virus has had on healthcare professionals across the country. The article spoke to the trauma of sitting with dying patients who don't have anybody else, who are unable to spend their last moments with their families. Their nurses holding phones so the family can be with their loved ones virtually as they take their last breaths. Others spoke to the fear of running out of personal protective equipment or bringing the virus home to their loved ones. I mean, there are professionals who are staying away from their families entirely, living in the garage because of the risk, because of their concern of spreading it. The trauma and PTSD that is developing because of this pandemic will be with those people for quite some time. And I really urge everyone to remember the sacrifices that these people make now and into the future, because that emotional pain can and probably will last long past this pandemic. So let's not forget about that as we continue moving through this entire process. I also want to briefly mention the murder of Ahmaud Arbery. This case of murder was brought to light some of the harshest truths of violence, of racism, that's been part of this country since its inception. The details around that murder, law enforcement's response, the judicial system failing this young man. I'm working to put my thoughts together, and the next episode that I plan on putting out will focus on this topic. Now, for this week's episode, before we start, I want to give a shout out to a bunch of reporting that helped me research this topic, helped me really dive in. The Clarion Ledger, USA Today, Mississippi Today, the Jackson Free Press, WJTV Channel 12 News down in Jackson, Mississippi. All of their reporting helped me put together the details for today's episode to help create a clear picture of the topic that we're going to be delving into. So, for today's story, today's focus, what do you get when you put together a news story involving a Hall of Fame Super Bowl winning quarterback, a retired WWE wrestler, and more than $94 million of welfare money in the poorest state in the United States? That is the mess that we're going to be talking about today that's occurring in Mississippi. We'll go back a few years. In 2016, John Davis, a man who had worked for years in human services at various levels in Mississippi, was appointed to the position of executive director of the Mississippi Department of Human Services. This is a position that's it's far away from the spotlight. He's not an elected official. But yet, his position, in many ways, is just as important as those elected officials. He's charged with carrying out the will of taxpayers and voters and the politicians. Heading the Mississippi Department of Human Services is especially important as Mississippi has the highest poverty percentage in the nation. As of 2018, we're looking at 19.7% of the population falling into poverty. Wise and prudent leadership at the Department of Human Services, the DHS, is necessary in helping the many people that rely on these services to keep a roof over their heads, food on the table. Now, when Davis was hired, he released a statement saying, "It is such an honor to serve the citizens of Mississippi in this role at the Mississippi Department of Human Services. I also understand the tremendous responsibility, and I will be fully committed to this assignment." Unfortunately for Mr. Davis, controversy would soon follow. In April of 2017, 13 months after Mr. Davis took over, the Mississippi DHS took heat over the fact that the department only accepted 1.42% of families who applied to the temporary assistance for needy families, TAMF. Now, this program is designed to help families in poverty with children under the age of 18. 1.42% acceptance was the lowest acceptance rate of any state. Now, states are able to come up with their own criteria for meeting or for qualifying for these programs, but 1.42% was so low that Mississippi state legislators were asking questions. Representative Jarvis Dortch said that he wasn't able to get a justification from the DHS for why the acceptance rate was so low. And he was concerned about the amount of poverty in Mississippi and the apparent difficulty people were having in getting enrolled in appropriate programs to help them get back on their feet. Now, according to a story in the Jackson Free Press, Mr. Davis and the DHS did not allocate $35 million that year. They had $35 million in extra money. And that money was earmarked to be used for TAMF, where they only accepted less than 1.5% of applicants. Again, Representative Dortch wanted answers as to why this money was not being spent, and how could it be used to more effectively help the people of Mississippi. He spoke specifically about the number of people who were on wait lists to receive funds for childcare. Mr. Davis cited difficulties in the way in which the money needed to be allocated. He said that he had already spent the maximum amount on federal child care block grants and would need to create a separate program to allocate the rest, something that he didn't want to do. He also pointed out that this leftover money, even if entirely spent on child care, would not address the needs of everyone on the wait list. Therefore, he decided to roll over the money for the following year. Now, I want you to think about this for a second. How important is childcare in helping people lift themselves out of poverty? As people today, through this pandemic, wrestle with the consequences of schools and daycares being shut down during the quarantine, there have been questions about returning to work in the future and how that can occur without childcare institutions in place, without schools open. But the sad reality is that this is the choice that many, many Americans in poverty already face. Anyway, the same time as all of this goes on, other lawmakers were looking at the financials of the Mississippi DHS. Representative Becky Curry noticed that under the DHS list of contractors, there were 30 listed simply as consultant, with no other information as to what services these people were providing to the DHS. So they were getting money that was earmarked for the DHS. And in the auditing materials, the DHS just listed these people as consultants. Representative said, okay, what are they doing? What are they consulting you in? They weren't able to get any information at that time. But one of the people on that list was Julie Osnes. Now, Osnes was indeed a consultant, and she had previously worked for Virginia, Alaska, and Wisconsin. And in the same month that Mr. Davis was taking heat for the spending down in Mississippi, remember, only accepting 1.42% of applications for TAMF, at that same time, both Virginia and Wisconsin, they had to pay millions of dollars back to the federal government because Julie Osnes and her consultancy group had made false claims for SNAP funds. Now, SNAP, that's the program that used to be called food stamps. The federal government, what they do is they give money to states that show low errors in allocating funds for welfare programs. Osnes's consultancy group came in and changed the way that the numbers were reported. They manipulated them in order for the states to get more money. So this was happening. This is already found to be an issue in other states, and yet in Mississippi, she was still working. It wasn't until November of the following year that the Department of Justice began examining her performance in Mississippi. And eventually, they found that the same thing had happened down in Mississippi, and eventually, money had to be returned back to the U.S. government. So we have this going on. We have this consultant. There are questions about, why is this person getting money? What are they actually providing? Are they committing fraud? We have, okay, so few families are actually qualifying for our welfare programs. What's going on there? What's the issue? Even though we have money left over. This was all within the first 2 years of Mr. Davis's time at the Mississippi DHS. Now, in 2019, the state auditor's office found significant issues with the department's 2018 report. Issues range from not monitoring health and safety measures at child care centers to making unallowable payments to daycares. Further, the report found that DHS was not monitoring money sent to child care organizations, SNAP, TAMP, or the Child Care and Development Fund. The money was just being sent out to the grantees with no follow-up, no accountability. And this report that was released by the state auditor's office noted that this has been an issue for several years now. One of the grantees was a nonprofit, the Mississippi Community Education Center. Their stated goal was to lift families out of poverty. And beginning in 2018, the DHS gave them around $53 million. Now, in just 1 year, just 2018, DHS gave them $30 million. And in that time, they'd helped 94 people complete a resume and 72 people fill out job applications. That's it. None of the money was spent on food, books, used clothing. That was all taken through donation. So, just to be clear, $130 million are given every year to Mississippi from the federal government for TAMF. Only about 5.4% of that money goes straight to the families, those in poverty. Instead, a lot of that money was being sent to nonprofits like the Mississippi Community Education Center. A nonprofit who is trying to provide education to get people back into the workforce. This is a stated goal of Mr. Davis's. I believe he called it his Gen Plus plan. They received $30 million in 1 year, and they helped 94 people complete resumes, 72 people fill out job applications, and provided some education classes for, again, $30 million. Now, looking into this further, the Mississippi Community Education Center then said, well, we're getting all this money, but we're then giving it out to other organizations. We're sort of a flow through for the funding. Upon closer examination, this structure allegedly allowed Mr. Davis and the owner of the nonprofit, Nancy New, and her son, Zach, to take millions of dollars and convert them to personal use. And this is where we have the ex-professional wrestler who had money that was earmarked for welfare programs in the state of Mississippi. That money instead was used for this wrestler's stay at a rehab facility in Malibu. Now, the pretext was this money was spent for anti-drug speeches, but none of those were ever given. Brett Favre, Hall of Fame former quarterback of the Green Bay Packers, he was paid over $1 million. The story is that those were supposed to be for a series of speeches, but he never gave them. Mr. Davis stepped down from his position in mid-2019, but was arrested in early 2020, along with Mrs. New. The investigation to state audits is still continuing today, with the state looking at $94 million in welfare money that may have been spent questionably. The state auditor, Shad White, said if there was a way to misspend money, it seems DHS leadership or their grantees thought of it and tried it. Now, this is all coming to light. One of the biggest scandals, one of the biggest episodes of corruption that the state of Mississippi has ever seen. So what has their response been to this? There have been no bills directly addressing the departments involved with these crimes. None have come out of committee in the state legislature. No fundamental laws, no new structures to prevent this from happening at such a large level. Instead, the legislature has passed a bill to audit the taxes of those on public assistance programs like SNAP and Medicaid. I just want to reflect on this for a moment. We've been talking about the huge number of people who are suffering hard times that could use a bit of support as they work to better their situations. We talked about how many people want to help and they think, yes, people should be helped in those situations, but, and then they have all these reasons. And those buts come from a wide range of concerns, some maybe well-intentioned, others steeped in prejudice. For instance, some people might say that the cost of addressing hunger is just too high. But consider this. Think about this. Brett Favre was paid over $1 million for giving speeches that he didn't give. Brett Favre, who's made millions of dollars through his playing career, through his endorsements, a man who can make more money through one speaking arrangement than most Americans would make in an entire year. He got paid over $1 million of money that was supposed to support families, children, people in need. That money that was given to him could have been used to feed roughly 1,000 children in Mississippi for a year. And when we're talking about a state with such huge poverty rates, so many people who are food insecure, that money is needed. That money can go a long way. This story disturbs me because it shows the wild extent that people can go in stealing money for good causes, stealing our tax money that's meant to help those in need. But this issue goes beyond Mr. Davis and his tenure in Mississippi. We see that there are others involved. We see the consultant who was there before him, and her company was working in several states, providing false numbers so that the states could get more money from the federal government, finding ways to shortcut the system of accountability established to make sure that money is reaching those most vulnerable. The response from the majority of the Mississippi legislature to ignore this scandal and instead foment more worry and consternation that the people who fraud the system are those most in need. When researching this, putting all these pieces together, I saw several times Mr. Davis heralding the fact that he was moving people to employment and having less reliance on the system. But we see here that the money that was supposed to be sent on creating the soft skills that Mr. Davis spoke about so often wasn't actually being used for those things. The nonprofit that was supposed to be providing these skills got paid $30 million to help less than 200 people complete resumes and fill out job applications. In the year, what was that, 2018. Everything about this was just another way to obfuscate, to hide the money, move it around so that he and his associates could use it in ways that don't help the people, the families, the children that they are designed to help. And I want to point something else out about all of this. Again, this vague concern about recipients of programs like SNAP and TAMF taking advantage of the system, defrauding it. In Mississippi, a family of three would receive $170 monthly in TAMF benefits, according to the Clarion Ledger. Okay, so if you were one of the families that were able to be accepted, you would get $170 for a family of three. The Center on Budget and Policy Priorities compared the amount of money families received from TAMF and compared that to the HUD fair market rent per month. Mississippi support services were the lowest in the nation. TAMF doesn't even cover a quarter of what the typical rent would be. And then when we look at the decreasing number of families receiving TAMF assistance in Mississippi, it's been dropping almost continuously since 2004. It's going from around 20% of families at that time, and now we're under 5%. And yet the poverty rate has remained roughly between 20 and 25% during this entire time. So how is this helping people? How is this caring for those in our society that need support? We've discussed several times over the course of these podcasts the way in which Jesus went to help those who needed support, who needed aid to get back on their feet, to flourish once more. And these were the people that were often overlooked. They were ignored by the powerful. Sometimes there was a stigma attached to them. But he did not care. He fought for them. He was there for them. And we've talked about the need to follow this example in our behaviors, in our actions. But because we live in a democracy, because we vote for officials to make decisions that shape our governmental policy, we have a responsibility to make sure that our government works in upholding justice and helping people when they've fallen on hard times. We must hold our government, our leaders, to a high standard because they've been entrusted by us, by our society, with completing the work that Jesus demands of us. Reading about this case in Mississippi, it put a bad taste in my mouth. Reading a number of stories that are similar to this about people in power abusing this power is disheartening. It's draining, and I know for some, it'll lead to cynicism, doubt in the entire system, a general distaste for the political. But unfortunately, we aren't afforded the luxury of ignoring these abuses. We need to stay engaged in our political systems because they have so much power. The United States is the most powerful nation the world has ever seen. We have an incredible amount of wealth, technology, and knowledge to draw from. Our political leaders are tasked with shepherding these resources and using them for justice. And our role as citizens is to remind them of that and make sure they're carrying out our will. We need to use our voices and use our votes. Political leaders can reflect the attitudes, the desires of their constituents. If we desire justice and equity and show utter disdain for corruption in all its forms, our political leaders will follow or new ones will rise. Let's go back to the Bible. Take a look at the book of Micah. Micah was a prophet, and he's speaking to people who are under attack by the Assyrians. The people are afraid, and they're seeking guidance. One of the interesting parts of this book is that the people, this would be the people of Judah, they believe that God will forever be on their side. After all, he saved them from slavery in Egypt, and he gave them this land. But Micah reveals the opposite. Micah reveals that God is upset with the people of Judah because they've lacked justice in their land for too long. And he's actually using the Assyrians as a tool to punish the people, punish what he sees as a deep layer of iniquity and corruption running through Judah. Micah 2 verse 1 says, "Woe to those who plan iniquity, to those who plot evil on their beds. At morning's light, they carry it out because it is in their power to do it. They covet fields and seize them, and houses and take them. They defraud people of their homes. They rob them of their inheritance. They carry it out because it is in their power to do it. This clearly calling out those in power, those that have abused said powers for their own means, taking advantage of people to get what they want. In Micah 3, verse 1, Micah says, "Listen, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel. Should you not embrace justice, you who hate good and love evil, who tear the skin from my people and the flesh from their bones, who eat my people's flesh, strip off their skin and break their bones in pieces? Who chop them up like meat for the pan, like flesh for the pot?" The imagery there is horrifying. The leaders are profiting from those that they should be leading. They're taking advantage of them in such a way as to destroy their lives, to cause great pain, to cause suffering. All because of this greed and a refusal to acknowledge the humanity of the poor. Later, the Lord says in verse 9, "Hear this, you leaders of Jacob, you rulers of Israel, who despise justice and distort all that is right, who build Zion with bloodshed and Jerusalem with wickedness. Her leaders judge for a bribe, her priests teach for a price, and her prophets tell fortunes for money. Yet they look for the Lord's support and say, 'Is not the Lord among us? No disaster will come upon us.'" Here the Lord criticizes the impunity with which the leaders have worked. Yes, they've done these terrible things, but they believe that the Lord is with them so they can get away with it. They don't feel any fear of retribution. Of course, until the Assyrians come. And then the last part I want to look at comes from chapter 6, starting verse 6. "With what shall I come before the Lord and bow down before the exalted God? Shall I come before him with burnt offerings, with calves a year old? Will the Lord be pleased with thousands of rams, with 10,000 rivers of olive oil? Shall I offer my firstborn for my transgression, the fruit of my body for the sin of my soul? He has shown you, O mortal, what is good. And what does the Lord require of you? To act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God." The people are wondering, the leaders are asking, what can they do? The response, act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with your God. Lord doesn't want any material recompense. He doesn't want the offerings, the olive oil, the firstborn. His demands for leaders are simple. And I see that, and I come back to today. Like I said earlier, we in America, we have a powerful, powerful right and responsibility to choose leaders that will lead us in a direction that will ensure justice. And we need leaders that will stand up for the poor, the overlooked, instead of seeking ways to defraud them or enrich their friends. It is our responsibility to hold our leaders accountable. We cannot abide by leadership that does differently. In doing so, we are nothing more than accomplices to the immorality and injustice that these leaders sow. We cannot afford to ignore it. We cannot afford to abdicate our responsibility in a democracy. The case in Mississippi is heartbreaking. Who knows how many children have been negatively impacted because of the greed of these few people? How many lives have been changed irreparably because of this? And I feel safe in saying that this is happening elsewhere. Tax money meant for programs to help those that need support being used in ways to purposefully enrich the powerful and their allies. This isn't just a problem in Mississippi. It happens everywhere, at all levels. But God has provided us with the blueprint, the clear guide for what he expects from leaders. And living in America, Living in a democratic republic, it's our responsibility to make sure that our leaders follow through. It's our responsibility that they are living up to these ideals. It's a simple message that we need to send to our leaders and all who would take on a leadership position. Act justly, love mercy, and walk humbly with God. Thanks again for listening to the podcast. We're going to wrap it up there. If you like what you hear, again, please share it, friends, loved ones. I really appreciate all of that. Also, give us a 5-star rating on the podcast app of your choice, iTunes, Google, whatever. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/I117. That's I, the number 117, all spelled out. And I also want to point out that I put links to all of the articles that I used for research for this episode in the show notes. So if you're curious, you want to do some digging, by all means, go take a look. A lot of great reporting that helped me really put together what was going on down there. Get a full picture of it. And yeah, that's it. Thanks again for listening, and I'll see you next episode.